CliffCentral.com.
Are you interested in virtual reality?
Yes.
Yes.
You should be, because it's fascinating, and there's so much going on in there. It is the one thing that everybody is excited about.
It's the future.
Yeah, big deal. And it's going to become the way that many of us interact with each other, actually. Because I don't think in the very near future there are going to be a lot of people who will not leave home. They won't have to.
Oh, that's the part that scares me, though.
Sure.
Does this mean like we'll have Christmas dinners
alone,
physically alone, but virtually with family around the table?
Probably. Look, I think that normal people will do normal things with virtual reality, and wacky, weird people
will
do. We are
normal, though.
No, but there are a majority of people who don't, you know, sit in the basement the whole day. And I think a lot of people will continue to do what they've always done, and virtual reality will be like an add-on.
Yeah.
But for some people, it will become their life. So we're going to speak to a guy who knows all about VR, and that's coming up next. If you want to call us, 0861-555-189. Oh, we don't have the phone number at the moment. What am I talking
WhatsApp.
About? Oh, for God's sake, that's such a habit. Yeah, you can WhatsApp us, 079-748-2090, or you can Skype us, Cliff Central, one word. And if you missed any of the interviews this week, we've had some killer interviews.
Power stuff.
This week. So if you've missed any of those, all you have to do is head on over to cliffcentral.com and you can listen to and download just about any one of them. That's your friend Adele.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you for just giving her to me.
Well, she's your friend.
In my head. I hope she just knows it in real life.
All right.
I am ready, friend, by the way.
Can you imagine Adele doing angry spoken word?
Oh.
Well, isn't that like a Thursday night at the local pub for her?
Pretty much.
I think when she's at the pub after about 7 beers, you get spoken word as a bonus.
Then she puts like actual music to it.
Oi, you at the door. Come out of here. Oh, I met you before.
That's how her songs come up. Exactly.
For sure.
It's the inspiration to her songs.
Absolutely. All right, everybody's talking about virtual reality. Very few of us have experienced it in its most immersive form, but many of us know a little bit about it. Only an even tinier minority of people know how to make virtual reality stuff. Because can you imagine trying to film stuff in VR? Can you imagine trying to put that together? That isn't easy.
Oh, I don't think we could do it, Gareth.
Oh, please, we're too stupid.
Well, what even goes to filming it in VR in the first place?
This is the thing, right? Because it's you need expensive equipment, and it's very difficult to do this. You've got to be a proper production company who knows exactly what you're doing. Filming 3D.
And despite all of this, we're still starting with porn.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously there are people who are trying to avoid that, trying to stick to other stuff. So in the studio with us this morning, and you've got to explain again, you've got to help me with the surname, because I've known your name for a long time, but I still can't pronounce it properly. So I'm going to let you do it for me. But he is his name is Ulrico. I've seen him kind of doing this stuff for a while now. It's very exciting work, and it's interesting to find out about, which we will do in a second. But how do I pronounce the? Is it Grech Kumbo?
Silent CH. Grecumbo.
Grecumbo. Mm-hmm. Ah, it's Italian.
It is Italian.
Ulrico Grecumbo. Nice to see you, dude.
Likewise, man.
You're good. Come up close to that microphone. All right, so let's talk about, first of all, virtual reality and deep virtual reality. Is there a difference?
No, not really. One is the format and one is the company name. So we're Deep VR.
Oh, okay. Hmm. Very good. Well, that's clever, because it almost sounded like you've taken it a level up.
Well, we're trying to. We're trying to keep ahead of the curve.
I see you brought one of those gears in here.
Yes. Indeed.
Damn, it's a fine-looking piece of equipment. What do those things cost now?
With a phone, probably about 15, 16K.
Yeah, you put a Samsung in the front of it, right?
That's right, yeah. That's right.
And then that serves as kind of your projector onto your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. When you film for something like this, how do you even start? I mean, I know how you film for 2D television movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just get a camera and you roll the movie. You kind of... You film the action, and then either it's digitally or on film, it's stored. And then you can render it, and you can do all kinds of things in post-production. You can edit it, all that other stuff.
That's right.
But with virtual reality, are you filming a little bit of this, a little bit of that? Are you filming everything in panoramic shots? Are you doing everything with drones? How do you even start?
So the easiest way to explain it is our camera rig looks like a ball that has a whole bunch of cameras pointed in all directions.
I've seen that. I've seen that with GoPros.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that ball takes a 360-degree view of whatever's going on, right?
Exactly. Yep. Captures everything. The real trick is stitching everything back together in post-production because there are still normal cameras. So, you know, cinematic VR, which is the kind of live-action filming world of VR, is still very much in its infancy.
I would imagine that takes forever if you have to stitch together every single still image.
It does.
To make a moving image.
Yeah.
You would need, first of all, massive processing power because you're dealing with high-resolution graphics.
Yeah. And loads of data.
Yeah, loads of data. And you also need a lot of manpower in the beginning because the machine won't know how to do it until it's seen a human do it.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Yep.
Damn.
Yeah.
Why go into something so hard? Why not just make ordinary old 2D stuff?
Well, we like barriers to entry. If you're lucky enough to get into a game early, you kind of want to figure out how to do something that is hard for competitors to do. So very difficult post-production has been a good way for us to kind of get ahead of the curve.
So, Ulrika, how did you get into this?
Well, I come from an experiential marketing background. So, yeah, mid-2014, Oculus had come out with their rudimentary headset and thought it was a very cool idea. I had no idea what to use it for. Bought one, found myself sitting down with some clients one day on the agency side and just spitballing ideas. And the idea of VR came along. And, you know, filming VR wasn't even on my radar at that point. And the client had asked us, are you guys able to recreate a jazz scene for us? We want to film one of our artists in a jazz club, and we want people to re-experience that as if they're physically present. And, you know, I liked the challenge, and I had no idea what the answer was. So I just said, yep, that's what we do. We specialize in that.
So you lied.
I did. I lied straight up. Fortunately, it worked out.
So they said, oh, well, that's fantastic. Here's a whole bunch of money. Go make it happen.
Exactly. Yeah.
How accessible is virtual reality to ordinary people? Because if you don't have one of these headsets, for example, you know, it's not something you'll experience.
Well, I think the major tech development that's happened and why VR has had such an amazing rise since about 2014, 2015 is because, you know, VR has been an idea for a really long time, since the 1500s. And we've never had the technology to actually
since
execute it.
Since the 1500s?
It. Yeah, crazy French painter. He painted a panoramic battle scene, and it put a helmet on a person's head, and you'd actually look around in 360. And, you know, it didn't look great, but there was just no technology to make it feel truly immersive. A couple of years ago, Palmer Luckey, the guy who started Oculus and, you know, got a big paycheck from Facebook, working in his mom's basement, hacking stuff together, took a cell phone screen, put it inside a plastic shell, and invented essentially the world's first commercial VR headset. Now, the good thing is that everybody has one of those.
Yeah, just about everyone has a smartphone.
They do.
And the people who don't have smartphones yet want one.
They do. And there's you know a huge rise of smartphone penetration, even in lower LSMs throughout continental Africa. So they reckon by 2020, something like 85% of people will have a VR-capable phone. So it's not quite the best VR experience, but it is accessible. So that's exciting.
So I understand this panoramic stuff of kind of being able to move your phone. And I've seen those photographs or those, I don't even know what you'd call them, where you move your phone around and it feels like you're in the room.
Mm-hmm.
That's a kind of virtual reality.
It is, yeah. We call that a window onto the world sort of experience.
Right.
For us, you know, our content does work in that way, but what we feel is kind of the holy grail of VR is when you do have goggles on, because at the heart of what we do and what gets me so excited is the sense of physical presence, the fact that your brain actually believes that you're physically in these places. And I can show you half a dozen videos, reaction videos of people watching.
I got dizzy. I almost felt like I was falling over on the one thing.
Yeah.
We were at some convention last year, and I put on this headset, and you're on top of a mountain, for example, and you look down and it feels like you're going to fall down into this chasm.
Yeah, yeah.
And you actually stumble forward or backward and you lose your footing because you're now, you're totally immersed in this.
Mm.
You actually believe, your brain is telling you you're in that place.
That's right. So sensations like vertigo, fear, empathy. They're all things that actually are conveyed, which is pretty exciting because, you know, VR, what's really interesting about VR is that, you know, we've been watching content on a fixed frame for 100 years now.
Correct.
VR puts us into the content for the first time in history. So we're actually experiencing a story from a first person point of view, which is pretty unusual.
Now, what stuff really excites you about virtual reality? I mean, you know, we were talking, joking earlier about, you know, how porn is going to drive it forward, because that's, you know, humans, we constantly look for the lowest common denominator first or the quickest way to make money. And there are a lot of lonely, sad people in the world who will only be interested in VR as long as it means that they can imagine that they're with the most beautiful girl in the world, for example.
Mm-hmm. Screw that. I want to go to Misha Barton's house and see what goes on there.
That's all I care. I mean, it's possible that one day we'll be able to do VR by proxy. In other words, we'll have something going on. It'd be like virtual VR, or let's call it reality VR. Mm. So you'd be able to go and hang around Misha Barton's house, walk around it, but you don't have to physically be present. You could be a drone flying around there or something.
Yeah.
That would be pretty terrifying for ordinary people.
It's not far off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what kind of stuff have you discovered about VR that has got you going, my God, I didn't even know this was possible?
Well, interestingly, on the porn side, just to touch on that quickly, because everybody always asks, it wasn't even a week.
See, especially.
Yeah. It wasn't even a week that we had web presence, that we got an inquiry to do something, which we did promptly turn down. But what is really exciting and something that we've experimented with on our own dime is wildlife. I think what's really interesting about wildlife is, you know, even when you're in a game park and you're on a safari, you're watching animals from a distance. So what excited us was the ability to actually experience a story or experience the natural world from the point of view of animals for the first time. So
you have the animals sitting there watching us.
Pretty much, yeah. Kind of accepting you as one of them, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's how Ben grew up. So that's right up your street, Ben.
But I was thinking about this the other day, right? Now, we all know going to a rugby stadium isn't the most fantastic of experiences. Firstly, it's overpriced. Secondly, you're going to sit next to some doer who knows nothing about the game, yet will talk for 80 minutes about how much he does. But if you can get this whole drone kind of thing, virtual reality, you're in your lounge, right? You've got the headset on. You're drinking beer that's from your own fridge. You don't have to wait for it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But imagine putting on the headset and you can fly over the field.
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. So then you can then have this like view like no other. And then you can put in all the different like stadium sounds and stuff, but you're watching a live game. You're watching the All Blacks and the Springboks.
Mm.
That's actually happening. This isn't the game. This is the match. But you're watching it from that perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like as soon as that happens, no one will go to the stadiums.
And imagine
going to the stadium will be free.
Imagine, like, you know, you've got these in the English Premier League, you've got these coaches who pace up and down the sideline who are very interesting to watch too. Yeah. Let's say the game is boring, but you want to watch the – you could choose your point of view.
But that's just it. Yep. You can choose any element of that and live it from your lounge.
You can zoom in on that person and watch them the whole way through the match just for your own entertainment.
Right, yeah. And the business model – yeah, the business model is interesting too, right? Because you could pay $200 to go to a stadium physically and have beer spilt on you, or you could pay 25 rand through some sort of virtual sort of gateway and watch a virtual match, but they could fit, in theory, 3-5 million people in a stadium.
Exactly.
So pretty interesting.
So when you think of it this way, like virtual reality is the only way forward, because you tell any sports fan what you just said now, okay, you can have someone literally spitting on you for $200 or for 25, you're in the game. They're going to make it rain on the latter all day.
Mm-hmm. It's an easy choice, right? Imagine you love golf, Ben, and,
exactly.
And I know you're already using like drones to map out the course, to fly down the hole to see what – this is stuff that was impossible 5 years ago. And now imagine being able to – there's got to be some means for attaching some sort of recording device to the head of the actual golfer.
Well, you can get
and when they take the shot, you have it from their point of view.
Well, you just get the caddy. You get certain caddies to sign up with this. Now, the Masters, which is the first major of the year, they've always been at the forefront of innovation.
Yeah.
There was the first sporting event ever of 3D, live 3D. First sporting event in color. First one to have internet scoring, live scoring on the course, the whole thing. So they'll be the first that will do this because they're into that.
Hmm.
And to think what could happen, because you can't just go, oh, I'm in Augusta this week, I want to go watch the Masters. It's a painstaking process to even so much to get your foot on there during a practice day.
Right.
The demand of this will be massive.
Is this your total focus at the moment?
It is, yep.
It's a full-time thing,
full-time
right?
Thing,
all
yep.
The other stuff has to be done by somebody else.
That's right.
This mm-hmm. is what you're interested in.
Yeah.
So tell me about what you guys have been filming. You mentioned wildlife earlier.
Mm. So
you've been up in Kenya, right?
We have, yeah. We went to go film the Great Migration. Seemed like a pretty wow. intuitive thing to film in VR. So we've been really, really busy at work, especially in post-production, getting that right. It was an insane shoot, absolutely intense and, super expensive. Again, we self-funded that one. We could afford to be on the ground for 10 days. So there was a lot of pressure to try and capture things that film crews, you know, capture in 6 months, 8 months within about 10 days.
Is it very expensive to film this stuff?
It is. Yeah. The hardware, as you mentioned, the really crazy computers, the software, all those licenses cost a lot of money. It's very time intensive. So, yeah, it is pretty expensive where it is right now. Yeah.
Do you think that's going to come down in cost because we're going to need to produce more of it and the equipment will become less expensive itself? Maybe there'll be more skilled people around so it won't have to cost so much to do.
Yep.
I mean, obviously, you mentioned come in where there's a very high barrier to entry, which is now, and establish yourselves. But ultimately, this is going to cost you a whole lot less, and most people will be able to film things in VR.
Yeah, it'll slowly start democratizing itself, I think. From a capture side, even Samsung has a little 360 cam out there, which you can buy for $4,000 or $5,000. It's not amazing, but it's significant. Same thing with post-production. Eventually, software will be smart enough to figure out what it is you actually want to be seeing and stitch everything together itself.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
When you work on this stuff, do you sometimes have to throw away a lot of the footage?
Yeah, plenty. Yeah. Yeah. Especially on the wildlife side.
Yeah. Because a lot of it's just boring, right?
Yeah. And unpredictable.
And
it's still wild.
Roll those cameras. You don't know when they're going to have a fight or
that's right.
kill some prey or do something interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. So tons of data thrown away and also tons of data that has to get stored. We've got this piece coming out called Exodus, the Great Migration, the Kenya shoot. It's a 9-minute VR documentary. One of the greatest scenes in that documentary was actually captured completely by accident. And so you don't want to miss those.
A kill?
It's a chase scene between a crocodile and a wildebeest in the Mara River, which is pretty crazy. So we were up on the banks and, you know, we had to hide from shot.
Yeah.
We had no idea what was going on. We thought we missed a crossing. They didn't go down. Turns out one of the animals actually did. Didn't see a crocodile. Crocodile chased it right underneath the camera. It was crazy.
Gee.
Yeah.
I would imagine that you need to be able to conceive of things in three dimensions. Like before you've even seen it, you have to be able to close your eyes and imagine how it's going to look. And that's a skill some people don't have. Some people have no spatial awareness. They
right.
don't have an ability to figure out 3D space.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the 360 field of view thing just does people's heads in. We've worked with a lot of experienced directors and people who are really, really, you know, they have a really good grip on fixed frame content.
Yeah.
But trying to understand how to quote unquote frame a shot without an actual frame, how it is to compose a shot, how it is to direct talent, etc. Is definitely a new skill set. So that's come with the format.
How often do you have to put on these headsets and check it out for yourself? Do you do this all the way through the editing process to see it for yourself?
Yeah, yeah.
So what, do you plug your phone in there and you do it?
Yeah, we use an Oculus Rift in our post-production suite. Yeah, so it's plugged into the PC and you edit the timeline normally and you put the headset on to check what you've done actually makes some sense.
You do any gaming?
Not as much as I'd actually like to do.
Because I would imagine virtual reality games might end up being the real money spent.
Yeah,
I don't think virtual reality documentaries and movies will ever make you nearly as much money as games will.
Games huge, yeah. It's bigger than Hollywood. And right now all the money being poured into VR is really for the gaming side of things.
Ever heard of people being injured while they've got this on? Because they can't see the real world. If you're in a normal room that has walls, a floor, doors, windows...
Mm-hmm.
If you put this thing on, you don't know where you are.
No, you don't.
In real physical space, you kind of have an idea of, oh, well, the door's over there, you know, the fireplace is over here. But then you're wandering around with this headset on.
Mm-hmm.
You could walk into a fire. You could smash your head against things. Could be very dangerous. You didn't think of that, Sia?
No.
Happens all the time. It does, yeah.
You're telling me
videos.
You're telling me you put that thing on and you think you'll just carry on as normal?
just be fine and normal.
No, you can't see through it.
So what are you saying? The only alternative is to be like in the middle of a felt just to ensure that I don't bump into anything.
But even then, you could fall on rocks.
Yep.
There's no safe... Is there a safe place to watch VR?
There is no safe place from VR. I've seen people flip over onto the floor with nothing around just because they thought they were losing balance.
Sia, you think you're at the top of a mountain. It feels to your eyes like you're really on the edge of a mountain because you can look down and the whole camera pans down with your head to reveal that underneath your feet is the tiniest ledge of rock and in front of you is a Grand Canyon-sized drop. And your body instinctively starts to sweat. You get scared. You start wobbling backwards and forwards on your feet. Before you know it, you think you're falling. And then you fall, but you actually will trip because your body's convinced that you're falling in thin air. And your legs can't keep up. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, those feelings are incredible. What kinds of experiences have you had on VR?
Many, too many to mention, but, I mean, one that I have here is a hot air balloon, which I've seen a couple people lose their balance, kind of standing on the edge and looking around. It's really beautiful. And as soon as they look down, we actually put the camera just over the ledge so that people would experience that vertigo.
Oh my God.
So that's one. Yeah.
But where are we in terms of like the actual full on experience? So the wind or at least the sound of the wind as well.
It's a good question. So we actually try and recreate that as accurately as nature gives it to us. So we use a special microphone called a spatial microphone.
Yeah.
Records in 360 degrees and can, you know, kind of be mapped for depth. So when you hear, for example, in the hot air balloon, the flame shooting up behind you, it sounds like it's behind you. When you move head, the sound pans with the headset. So, even the sound is getting there. So we've got two sensors that are enough to trick your brain. They're good enough to trick your brain. So
two sensors. The other three that are left are taste and smell and touch.
Mm-hmm.
So out of all three of those, which one do you think is going to be the hardest to get to next?
Well, smell's there.
They're working
on that. You can
smell
do that.
Smell is already...
Scent machines. Yeah. So you can do that.
Imagine running through a field of flowers. Okay. I'm going to try and make this a happy scenario rather than ugly.
Yeah, the ledge.
Imagine,
thing.
Yeah, you're running through a field of flowers. They can create the picture for you very beautifully, very easily. They can create the sound for you. As far as C is concerned, this is the kind of sound that he would want. I imagine.
Like a field of flowers.
Yeah, well, you're running through a field of flowers.
Yes.
So I'm thinking it's probably something like this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then they can make the smell of flowers.
That's accurate.
Now, the next obstacle, obviously, is the taste of the air and the taste of, you know, pollen in the air or whatever it might be. Maybe there's a, I don't know, maybe there's some kind of other taste that you need to implement. Flowers, field of flowers is a very bad idea in this case, a very bad example. But then the last one, the hardest obstacle to overcome is going to be touch.
Actual feeling. But I'd have to say that it would kind of be easier in a generic situation like, you know, field of flowers. But if you're now going very accurate, like the White House, you know, virtual walk through the White House, like what does a White House smell like? How do you get that accurate?
Or self-tan. If it's old wood.
Or if it's like, you know,
self-tan.
Misha Barton's house, how do you know how she smells?
Well, more the taste of vodka.
Bad examples. Let me keep going.
And probably weed. There's a lot of that smell going on. But really, Ulrika, how are we doing on those other senses? Because that's going to be really, really big one day.
Yeah, touch is the hardest one of them all. And there are at least 10 companies out there that are working on what they call haptic suits. So anything ranging from a glove, that if you see content, you know, like a wall, when you touch the wall, you know, it gives your hand the sensation of there being resistance, to full body suits running through a field of flowers, and you actually feel little things kind of tapping against your legs. These things already exist. They're just not kind of commercial, but it's there. Yeah.
Already.
When you watch a movie in future, first of all, you'll do it from your house. You'll be able to plug in the suit, this headset, the whole thing, and it will feel totally immersive.
Mm.
And what does that mean? You're actually in the room with the actors?
Yeah.
You aren't it's not an us and them situation.
No. So the Holy Grail really is that you can even influence the story by things that you say. So what's really interesting to me as well is the convergence of different technologies, voice recognition, CGI animation, volumetric VR, which allows you to move in your room, but then actually move in live action content. So in other words, move through a video, which is...
Imagine being in the middle of a battle.
Yeah. Think of like the Avengers, right? And the cool thing with the Avengers is you could watch the movie 8 times, choosing to be each of those characters. So you could actually be Iron Man for a two-hour stint, mm-hmm. and then choose to be Hulk, and you'd pay twice to see the same movie in a different way.
That is superb. Pretty fun. I'm excited about that stuff. Yeah.
Oh, this is a lot for my mind to process. This is honestly a lot for my mind to process.
Yeah, we've often had this idea, you'd have video conferencing, for example, where you can actually see the people in the other room and you can have a conversation. Now imagine you're able to video conference into Cape Town or to New York from wherever you are, put on the headset, they think you're in the room, you're at the chair, you're sitting there with them.
Because I'm now thinking in terms of...
So these are commercial applications.
You know, when you were speaking about the bodysuit situation, you can actually now hug someone as well and feels like you're hugging them and the smell as well. Mm. That's fascinating. So when you say that all this technology, you know, with the smell and the touch is already there but not commercial yet, what sort of time, you know, frame are we looking at?
In other words, what he's saying is he wants it now.
Mm. See,
or how long do I have to wait?
He does. Yeah. He wants virtual hugs immediately.
Look, it depends on the depth of your pocketbook, really. I mean, you can buy suits. You'll just spend ₹250,000 on the suit right now. But give it two years, 3 years, that's going to halve.
Already, like where?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's lots of crazy stuff.
Eventually,
out there.
We will find ways of, I suppose, the way to short circuit this is to find ways to stimulate the brain to convince it that things are happening, even though they're not.
Mm, exactly.
So from a touch point of view, rather than build a suit, is to figure out what kinds of impulses, if you wore a helmet, for example, and you could send a discharge to a very localized part of the brain that would make it feel like you'd been stung or you were, I don't know, under pressure, or you could feel a force against you, that kind of thing. Imagine how that could be done just through these means, electronic means rather than actual physical means. And it was as convincing. You would think you'd been there. It would actually form part of your memory rather than just an experience in a movie.
Yeah.
So is virtual reality, the vision for virtual reality, for it to be mainstream, for every single person on Earth ultimately to have a virtual reality headset and that's how they live their life?
Isn't the vision eventually to blur the lines between reality
right,
and fiction?
Yeah. The big plan really is to drop the word virtual. It just becomes a filter of reality, which is scary, and there'll be a dark side to it, and it's also kind of exciting in certain ways.
You know, if you think about it, you could have two people in exactly the same scenario, experiencing exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. And they will have totally different perceptions and recollections of that moment. Which is why you have a husband and wife going to dinner, and they're in the same environment, they have the same conversation, but they have totally different experiences of that dinner. Now imagine being able to climb into your wife or girlfriend or friend or boyfriend or whatever's experience of the dinner, to see it from their point of view, to understand an argument, if an argument breaks out from someone else's point of view. This is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's a lot of research being done now, too, by Stanford to that point. And what they've done is they've combined body tracking with VR. And what happens is you stand
in the
room.
Body tracking?
It maps your movement. So basically it tracks kind of like a Microsoft Kinect when you play gaming on an Xbox. Mm-hmm. It has the ability to know when you've kind of swung your hand, which is your tennis racket. So they can map your body and they can turn you into any sort of ethnicity, age, gender. You'll end up looking at yourself in a mirror, but it's a virtual mirror. And if you, let's say, you know, a young white guy, they'll actually superimpose the body of an elderly black lady. And you'll look at yourself in the mirror, and they've been doing studies on how long you should be doing that up until the point where your brain accepts that that's actually you. And so you move your hands around, and you see this other person initially moving their hands, and you just do this for about, the magic number is 3 minutes and 5 seconds or something. And they then put you into a situation where your avatar is discriminated against. and they measure your biometric kind of responses, and it turns out that you feel the same thing you would have felt if you were actually that person of that race, gender, age, which is
so this whole thing of you don't know how it feels will disappear from the language.
No more excuses.
So when you have a male-female moment where, you know, a woman will say to you, oh, you never listen to me, or you don't know how what I'm trying to say, or you don't know how I feel, you'll be able to immerse yourself in it and have a better understanding of what she means.
Wait, so they're saying in like 3 minutes and 5 seconds, mm-hmm. you can psychologically get to understand.
I could feel what it's like to be a persecuted minority.
Mm. Yeah.
Imagine how that'll open up the ways that we learn to respect each other.
I'm not ready.
Come on, Sia, this is exciting. Ben, don't you think?
I'm not ready.
I'm all in. I'm all in.
I mean, this amplifies your existence on Earth. It gives you a chance to live many lives during one life.
Mm.
Which is what we all try to do in our own heads anyway. Now we've just got a medium to do it in a more formal
sure.
way.
Look, I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves now. This is all, it's only in the very early stages.
It is, yeah.
But yeah. It must be cool for you to know that you're in the beginning stages of something so exciting.
It is. Look, I think there's a good point to trying to plan towards something. There's a good reason why VR is all the rage right now. It's not just a gimmick. It is truly useful. It is truly fascinating to know that we essentially have the technology in our pocket to do almost everything we've been talking about. So it is. It's super exciting.
And to go anywhere without actually having to go there.
Mm.
That, to me, is interesting. I mean, it could have very, very negative implications for tourism. You don't need to be there, especially if you can bring in the other senses eventually.
Yeah.
You don't need to be in the Piazza San Stefano in Venice eating bruschetta to know that that's how it feels and tastes and sounds and everything else, right?
Yeah.
See, I kind of feel like we're missing out on things now. We'll never get to feel a real flower.
No, you can. Of course you can. You don't lose anything. You can still get on a plane, go there, pay the money, live in a hotel. Or you can do this, and it'll cost you a couple of bucks.
Which is the only way you can really do it. So we can all sit here and go, oh, but I want to do it, but you never do it. So it's better.
Let me explain. I don't want to spend hours on a plane. I don't want to go to the Antarctic on a ship and spend 2 months at sea to go and stand on some ice and watch a bunch of penguins fighting with each other. I would rather do that in virtual reality and save myself the 2 year, 2 month, 2 week long boat ride, if you don't mind me.
I get that aspect of convenience. Okay.
Like you could experience it without all the other added bullshit.
Mm. Instant gratification, right?
Right.
So you can now go to Turkey without the threat of dying.
You can have sex with Giselle.
Hmm.
And you don't have to leave your house. And you don't have to look like Tom Brady.
Or Tom Brady. There we go. Okay. Yeah.
You don't have to be him. You could have, I mean, women like Giselle. Can you imagine the future for a model? What you'll do is you'll go to a studio every day, and you'll be filmed by these virtual reality guys doing a whole bunch of stuff. And then all the perverts at home will watch that footage, and then you get paid like a fortune for it. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've thought of this, right?
Well, I thought of the business model.
Oh, come on.
No doubt.
I've thought about this all the time. So you mentioned wildlife. We've spoken about how it could be used for tourism. We've spoken how it could be used for video conferencing. We've talked about porn. We've talked about how it could be used to connect people over vast distances and all that kind of stuff. But what else could it be used for?
Well, we're quite interested in industrial application too, which is perhaps less exciting, but very, very useful.
Explain.
So think about, for example, health and safety. You've got a new person who's joining a workforce. They work in a factory. Now, the health of a factory is judged by how many health and safety incidents they have.
Yeah.
If you're able to immerse somebody in a very dangerous environment before they're physically in danger, combining that with the retention and learning abilities that VR delivers, you know, we feel quite strongly that you could reduce the number of incidents where people are actually getting physically harmed because they are being told things, certain things are dangerous before they're actually there. And education is another one. There's a company in the States that specializes just in history lessons. And what they do is they recreate battles. And Damn. Recreate history lessons, and you can choose which side of the, you know, whatever it is, you know, civil war you want to be on in the US, and you're not learning history from a textbook. You see what it's like to be in the trenches. So education's really interesting.
Imagine being on the Million Man March with Martin Luther King, and you're standing in that crowd, and you can hear him in the distance because you feel like you're really in DC. It's a cold winter's day, standing there on the grass of the mall. I mean, I can't imagine anything more exciting. This is as close as you'd ever get to a time machine.
Exactly. Yeah. Teleporting. Huh?
Man, that's cool.
Yeah.
See, those industrial applications don't sound boring at all. Suddenly, training videos become exciting because you're living them. But you do a training exercise as Iron Man. Huh? God damn it, this is cool.
It's the endless potential. It's like it must frustrate you knowing that there's so much you want to do, but there's only so much you can do.
It
like
is.
That must be, I guess, the only thing that's really kind of stopping you every single day. Like people must come to you every day and go, wow, you guys can do this. Like we've been doing for the last 20 minutes.
We get it all the time.
In 5 years, maybe.
Because everybody has their own ideas, right? Yeah. You start unlocking their own sort of idea of the potential, and they start saying, wow, you guys could do virtual surgeries. And it's like, well, actually, you could. And that alone, you know, could be its own kind of whole business.
So true. If you've got a specialist, it's like two or three guys in the whole world that can do a certain operation.
Yeah. There's no time to get them physically there, perhaps no money. You know, the person can't afford a 15 million rand doctor, whatever it costs.
Yeah, exactly.
But to pay 100,000 rand for them to kind of live stream in and supervise an operation, all of the technology is there right now to do that.
Well, is the technology advancing quickly enough? I mean, can you even keep up, or is it still too slow for you?
It's pretty tricky to keep up. I mean, on a weekly basis, between capture hardware, display hardware like the goggles, and the software, there's a big change almost every single week. So you have to be pretty agile, which is another good barrier to entry. But I mean, for example, these cell phone screens. You know, we got to a point where, you know, we've got these retina screens.
We think
we've reached the holy grail of cell phone screens, and then we suddenly put these inside a Gear VR or Google Cardboard, and it magnifies the pixels. And now you walk into a macro, right? You see a 4K television screen. That's the highest definition TV screen you can buy over the counter. In 2 months' time, our cell phone screens will have 4K screens, same number of pixels in a fraction of the size of a screen.
Wow.
Because of VR.
Wow.
So it's accelerating very, very quickly. Things we didn't need 6 months ago are being developed right now.
Isn't this going to make every other piece of cinema, every other piece of documentary footage up to now look terrible?
Probably, in certain ways. I mean, we don't think that VR is going to necessarily kill TV, you know.
Everything that won an Oscar up to now will be bullshit.
It'll serve a purpose still, I think.
Look at us and laugh.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is that TV is easy because you don't have to earn your content. You don't have to look around and find what's actually happening in a scene. So you just sit back with a pack of chips on a couch and you just kind of consume it.
Wouldn't it be cool in a movie? Like, I don't know, name one of your favorite movies.
The Devil Wears Prada.
You're joking, really?
Yeah, you surprised by that?
All right, so you
it's in my top five.
Right, so you walk into Meryl Streep's office.
Yes,
in the show.
I'm with you.
But now instead of looking at Meryl Streep, which is what the camera wants you to do, because that's the scene they filmed, VR will let you look around her office, see what books she's got on her shelves, check out the floor. Maybe she's got a really expensive carpet under her feet. You'll be able to look up at the light fitting. You'll be able to look back at the office, see what her workers are doing.
What does this mean for the way things will be shot in the future? How particular or exact do you have to get into the details? It can't just be a little old set with fake books. It has to, you know, everything needs to be labeled and attention needs to be paid in every single detail.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, look, right now where we are is a viewer's point of view is limited to where the camera physically was on that set. So if you are 3 meters away from a bookshelf, if you can't read, the name of the book in the set, and in real life, you wouldn't be able to in the content. But where we are going to move to within the next 2 to 3 years is this format called volumetric VR that I mentioned before, where you can walk around. So in that case, you'll be in Meryl Streep's office, but instead of sitting in a chair, you could actually stand up and go and look at the bookshelf, in which case it would have to replicate the same sort of resolution as reality. So they reckon that's probably around 24K in terms of resolution. You get 4K screens right now, 24K is what virtual reality Retina is.
So that's what Bruno Mars is singing about. 24-karat magic.
Yeah, that's right.
And what does this mean for budgets as well? Does this mean like shooting budgets will obviously be going up?
Well, I think there's an interesting kind of web of dynamics, right? So you've got early technology that is super high-end is going to be super expensive, and as time goes by, more people use it, and market economics kind of take play, and, you know, what now is the same price as a high-end, you know, camera on a Hollywood set is what you'll pay for a 360 rig or a volumetric 360 rig in 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now.
We should have one in the studio here. We should have it on a pole that comes out of the top there, and you can actually like look around the studio in real time.
Yeah, zooming in on us at 6 in the morning, though.
You're going to be horrified.
That'd be great.
You're going to be horrified.
On a 4K TV screen.
Have I got anything in my teeth?
Well, someone will be able to find that out.
Wouldn't that be cool? Man, I love this stuff. Are you a bit of a geek in your spare time? I mean, are you following all these tech trends? Is this stuff that interests you anyway?
Yeah, I'm a full-time geek. Yeah. Yeah, I have an engineering background and never really seem to escape that. So, yeah, gadgets, tech, you know, futurism, all that stuff.
What stuff are you looking at now?
Look, I mean, VR is super interesting to me. Where VR is going, augmented reality in a certain way is interesting to me. But yeah, I'm interested in a lot of different things. Energy, you know, fossil fuel-free vehicles, space travel.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Damn, imagine you can travel to space in VR.
Mm.
No, you don't actually have to become an astronaut and do years and years of training. You can go to Mars, Sia.
This is, yeah, mind-blowing.
It's fantastic. Honest to goodness. I don't see a bad side. Is there a dangerous side to this?
I think that's relative to...
I will never leave home and never talk to another human being.
Yeah.
I don't see how this is dangerous.
Right. So is that danger? I mean, to some people, yes. You know, when cell phones came out and social apps, things like Facebook and WhatsApp came out, a lot of, you know, parents were super worried about kids, you know, forgetting how to socialize in the real world. And to a certain extent, they are. Is it bad? Maybe. Is it good?
Hey, some of us are not even that good at socializing in the real world as it is. So.
Yeah, that's what we call early adopters, right? They're the ones who flock to these things in the beginning.
Wow, what kind of a setup would we have at home? I'm trying to think of what the modern home will look like if we live in VR.
Mm.
Well, you wouldn't need much.
I mean, because your office can be anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't need much, to Ben's point. I mean, right now we've got clunky headsets. It looks ridiculous. It feels ridiculous. That'll slowly, you know, start becoming something like glasses. Glasses will then start becoming contact lenses. And again, to the point of a filter, you know, virtual reality will just be a filter to your real world. You'll be like, okay, well, Stanton looks kind of cuck today.
I'm going to make it summer. Winter.
Yeah.
You can say, I don't like winter. I'm going to turn this view into summer.
Yeah.
Have you seen the series Black Mirror?
I have.
So episode 3, where they, I was telling you about it.
You are obsessed with
everything. Like,
I have not heard Ben.
You can replay your memory.
I've not heard Ben so obsessed with the show in my life.
It's an amazing
replay,
show.
You could replay your memory.
There was an episode, and obviously the dangers around that. But it's like, we're moving there. We can't help it. Movies have been showing this for quite some time now. This is where we're going.
Mm.
Like none of this is just that. Remember that show Beyond 2000 when we were children?
Yes.
What a pile of shit that was. Like, there was a couple of things here and there. Otherwise, they were just spitballing ideas. Well, in 2027, we're going to do this.
Right. Whatever. Yeah. That movie's like Total Recall, same thing. You know, being able to essentially inject the brain with memories that are not really yours. It's kind of real, right? I mean, virtual reality, it's sort of the same thing.
It's like in The Matrix. He's about to get his ass kicked, so he just downloaded Kung Fu. And he fought some dude. Like, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's the future. So yeah, it's going to be fantastic. All right. Uriko Greg Kumbo, thank you very much for coming to see us this morning.
You're welcome.
Very, very cool.
Thanks
for
having me.
And I love it. I can't wait to see some of your work.
Great stuff.
Can we see it? Is there anywhere
you can
go and see it?
Yeah.
Where?
So on our YouTube channel, which is just search for Deep VR with a space between Deep and VR. And our Facebook page has a bunch of stuff too. Deep space VR. Yeah, a lot of our work is up there. Client work is up there.
All right, dude. All the best to you. Thanks for coming to share this stuff with us. It's fascinating. CliffCentral.com.